Hi and welcome to the Sunday Lunch Project Manager podcast for Sunday the 11th of September. This week I have part two of my chat with Andy Kaufman, the people and projects guy. So when you moved into that management role, was that kind of line management within software teams and all? So how did you move and why did you move into project management? How did that happen?
So I started my career in the very early 80s. And as I got into more of officially a management role in that I had direct reports, it was almost more of a team leader. Like, I don't remember what the exact title was, but it was more of a team leader. And it was effectively a PM role. We just didn't call it project management.
Right.
And then when I got into a formal manager role, once again, we didn't call it that. But, you know, when I go back and I think about the responsibilities I had, it was effectively what we'd call project management. I eventually became a director and a vice president. But throughout that whole process, at one point, it was when I was at a VP level, we brought in some project management training. And I want to tell you, Nigel, to me, that was just like, it's almost like the scales from the eyes, because you know, you're one of those things when you're like, I'm doing it. Now I know what it's called.
Yeah.
Or now I know the why behind it. And then I wasn't doing it all perfect by any stretch, but it gave me these ideas of, well, we kind of did a work breakdown structure, but now we know what it's called. And we kind of did risk management, but we didn't really formalize it in the same sort of way. So to me, that was, I mean, I just deeply resonated with it. And when I finally realized that project management is how do we get things done, to me, that is, I just want to dedicate the rest of my life to doing that, like myself, as well as just helping other people do it.
Yeah, because at the end of the day, it's and I've seen it. I was talking with someone, and project management, when you're doing project management, you are changing the world. Now, it's whatever context it is about changing the world. It is making a difference to what happens. Now, you're not necessarily doing it. Enabling change is probably the best way to describe it. But you are. It's such a the influence that you can have is massive, isn't it? And it is. For good and for bad.
I think I
was kind of fortunate. I think in from my point of view is that the project management was a career. Project management was something, but it was still very new. But it was quite a while after that. It wasn't something I saw as part, because I did business studies qualification coming out of college. That was sort of mid late 80s. Mm-hmm. We had motivation, organization. I don't remember any of the document marketing, all this. I don't remember ever being taught project management in that. And I would hope, and I've not checked this, I need to check it, that they have project management as a, preferably as a complete subject for a year, but I guess they'll probably have stuck it in alongside management generically. But those skills as a business person are so critical. And I know I'm preaching to the converted here, and
it's good for your listeners to be reminded of it though.
Yeah.
You know? Because I think sometimes we think of it as only a title, and we forget what you were talking about, how this is how you get things done. Like the world beats a path to people who get things done instead of just talk about it. I teach in an MBA program. One of my MBA students came in with a mug that said MBA for when your BS will only take you so far, which I think is funny. We get to get stuff done.
Yeah. Yeah, I think you're right. And I think that's what draws people down. You get new stuff done and draws people to the industry. No, I get frustrated when I'm managing projects or have teams that are managing projects that aren't getting anywhere because of them, but because of the garbage that can sit around the outside of it sometimes.
Absolutely. Yeah.
That's the worst, because you want to make that change. You want to help the people who are going to get that, the stakeholders who want it, or the end users who want it. Those are the things you want to get out to people as quickly as you can. So thinking about that then, and you kind of worked out maybe many years later that you'd been doing project management, what do you think of as being your first project?
You know, it's so funny you say that, because It would have been back, it probably one of my summer jobs in high school. So check this out. There was a dermatologist in town who had a lot of money. He was kind of a geek at heart. He bought a computer system where a lot of, doctor's offices today, of course, for decades have had these, but at the time it was unique to have it.
Revolutionary.
Yeah. So he allowed me to have a summer job doing that. Here's the crazy thing. His hobby on the side was he raced pigeons. Have you ever heard of this? Like they have pigeon races?
Oh, yeah. Oh, in the UK, it's done a lot.
Well, yeah. Exactly. And I don't even know what it's like in the States anymore, but he was into this. And so they release them all at the same time. And then they
fly home. Yeah.
So anyway, he wanted software to track and start predicting based on history. And so to me, the guy who I could live on burritos and hamburgers and drinking Coke or whatever and just caffeine working through the night on pigeon racing. That is one of the crazy. early, isn't it crazy? Yeah,
because that's you. That sounds like you're doing AI and heuristic analysis. that now you'd have a massive one of the big cloud providers. You'd have something running in there. I wonder if you still got the code and whether people still would use it or whether it's already out there.
You know, it's funny. It was on what was the platform? Wang. Wang.
Wang. Computers. Yeah, I remember Wang computers.
Some mid range computer, And this is where I feel we always feel compelled to say, and 20 megabytes was this big. But when he got this big Phoenix drive, we thought we were just swimming in data. And it's just so funny to look back and not in a bragging sort of way, just to see where our industry has gone, the constraints we had then, and we have different constraints now, but I didn't do a formal work breakdown structure. We didn't have a project charter, but we did some early elements of scope defining and managing expectations and adjusting when things were off track. So it was probably my first project.
Sounds like it probably in those scenarios, probably been quite an agile little project there, really, in many ways, because you've got a good product owner there, probably, and somebody who will give you that direction.
Yeah,
excellent.
Yeah, absolutely.
So that's your first project. You kind of sit there and go, right, Andy doing his first project, summer school. So he's destined to be a project manager because you were doing it that early. Thinking about all the projects you've run over the years, what would you say is the largest one you've managed? And when I say largest, I don't mean cash. I don't mean number of people. I don't mean number of bits of tin or whatever. It's the one that felt most significant. And I should call it significant, but I like this conversation anyway. So it's the most significant one to you. And what did you learn?
You know, it's interesting. I love talking to people who have retired and asking them, hey, what's something that you're really proud of, when back in the day? And they never talk about when I was sitting around eating donuts, and really bored. They always talk about that project like you're talking about, I think, here. This one that felt like it was, really big or really difficult. And I worked for the company AC Nielsen for many years. So Nielsen. And we had a boss, in fact, a management team that was very happy to invest in new technology. And so the project that comes to mind when you ask that question is a project where we're using very up-to-date technology from Microsoft and we were changing languages that we were using to develop. And the team was one of those teams that had been together for a while. It's like the football team that now they've been together for a decade and they're killing everybody. It felt like we needed a walk-in song when we walked into a room because we just worked really well together. Anyway, it was daunting deadlines. It was huge business pressure and we ended up delivering. And so I couldn't tell you the budget. It was probably about a year long, but it was a combination of the technical challenges because new technology. I mean, you actually work with a lot of new technology yourself to this day. Yeah. And so, you know, there's the good part of what comes from Amazon or Google, and there's the downside of being on the leading edge. But that when we look back, in fact, I still have friends from those days, and we look back at those times of like, we were living life right then, you know, like that was the project. And so, like I said, it was like the technical challenge, the business challenge of it, the camaraderie of it, and the business benefit then as well.
Yeah, that's brilliant. I think sometimes with those sort of teams, and quite a few of the conversations I've had historically with people, is when you have those scenarios, when you have that team, when you have that sort of potentially unachievable project, and that team that comes together to deliver it, and you work with them, that creates something very special. And it creates that lasting memory. Mm-hmm. It's those things where you thought, I don't know how the heck I'm going to get this done. And then you get it done. That kind of, I sit there and I think there's certain ones that I sit, and they weren't the easy ones necessarily. They were the frustrating ones and quite good in that way. So what did you learn? What do you think your biggest learning from that particular project was?
You know, I think probably there's a number of things that come to mind, but upon reflection, I probably, even at the role I was there, tried to do too much myself. And it was a project that was big enough that I couldn't, I had to rely on the team. Yeah. And so learning how to almost be more of the conductor of the orchestra instead of the first chair violin. I think I spent too much time trying to, you know, run back and hit the drums for percussion. And I think I spent too much time trying to do that previously. And that project, it was just impossible to do it. And learning that if we can create the conditions under which people can perform, that's so much better than having to just perform myself. And so, there are a number of things. I guess another lesson out of that one is there's almost always a way to figure it out. Probably the best leadership advice I've ever gotten, Nigel, if you have to put it into three words, figure it out. What do leaders do? We figure it out. And for some reason, those three words have helped me so many times that when you're in this, it's maybe I don't even know how we're going to do that, but I have to have this belief that as a team, we will be able to figure it out. Yeah. And I think if we're leading the team and we have that bias that, hey, listen, I understand this is difficult and I don't have the answers yet, but we will be able to figure this out. I think there's something about that optimism that we had, even though we weren't sure how it was going to happen. And I suppose one other lesson related to it is kind of implied what I said is, if you surround yourself well, you can do amazing things. As cliche as that sounds, with a really strong team, and it was a really strong team. So trying to keep teams intact, trying to make sure you're attracting as much as possible really strong players, that makes a big difference.
Yeah, that makes sense. I think that on those, it's kind of that figure out thing is, I've been guilty of this, is holding my hands up in the air going, I don't know how we're going to do this. Can't do this. I don't believe we'll do it. And that goes into the team. My attitude goes into the team. And I've seen it happen. It was through a period when I was struggling. Mm-hmm. I'll openly admit it. I was struggling mentally. And I look back now and I realize that it was one of those things where traditionally I was an optimist. Traditionally I could be that person to go, yeah, it's garbage, but let's work it out. We can do it. You lot are great, kind of thing. And we built it out. But I wasn't in that space. And I saw that when I look back in hindsight, I saw that go out to people. And I think I love the thought of being, you're saying about the orchestra and that analogy of that, and being in that position, in order for you to be able to sit back and go, guys, I know you can do this. I'm available for you. You, if you're running around headless chicken trying to do everything at once, you haven't got a room to sit back and help them lift the chin up and look. And you aren't there to be able to also go, right, bounce the ideas. Because that's the thing I noticed, and I'm trying to do myself lately, is to be more available rather than in meetings all the time. To be sat back going, I don't know how to do this. Yeah. Oh, perhaps we should do this, so that when I need to do something quickly, bang, I've got the room to do it, and I'm protecting my diary like a like voraciously, to say, look, I need that. I need air gaps that I've got nothing planned in. Whereas I used to feel like, well, if I haven't got either my work planned in there or a meeting planned in there, then I should I feel like, well, what am I doing then? And it's kind of, well, no, you need those air gaps.
Yeah,
to be there, but you need to protect those air gaps, because if you leave an empty diary, people fill your diary up. So kind of a juggling point, isn't it?
What I love about that is when you respect your time, you're also showing your team that they should respect their time. Right? So you're modeling in a good way. Like I thought about this a lot over the last 2.5 years, because we know there's secondhand smoke, right? With smoking, there's secondhand stress. Yeah. If I'm stressing out with my teams, or if I'm stressing out with my family, I mean, we're human, right? So we'll have our bad days, if that's my go-to, or you know what I'm characterized by, it's going to affect the people around me. So I feel like if we can get ourselves in project situations where we can't do it all ourselves, right? Like we just, it is beyond us to be able to do that and learn to be the conductor. You know, how can I coordinate? How can I mentor? You know, things like that. I appreciate your comments there, Nigel, about how it gives you time to think, it gives you time to catch up, and it models to other people that they should do the same as well.
Yeah, yeah, cool. So just thinking about this then, so we've had your largest thing, and that's kind of, I've got a question about proudest delivery, and it sounds like actually that delivery you were talking about there is probably sits quite comfortably.
It really is, yeah.
But let's have some more fun now. So what was your biggest screw up in a project, and what did you learn the most from that?
Yeah, well, you know, when I think of biggest screw up, I mean, I speak for a living, so I screw up all the time. say stupid stuff. So there is a virtual smorgasbord to draw from on this one. But one of my one of the most important screw ups in my life actually goes back to college. Hmm. And I mentioned I played basketball in college, so I had a basketball scholarship. So my college is paid for. This is one of the biggest gifts that you can give somebody at that age. After my junior year, my third year, my body was kind of feeling beat up. It was clear I was not going to play professional. I was just kind of burned out. And so I quit. But it wasn't just that I quit. It's how I quit, Nigel. I stopped going to meetings. I didn't go talk to the coaches. I didn't have an explanation about it. I just stopped showing up. And, you know, I lost my scholarship, which I should. But to this day, one of my biggest regrets, you know, I don't have a ton of regrets, but one of them is how I ended there. Mm. And what I've learned from that screw up is that doesn't matter what the context is. It's like one of my core values now, Nigel, end well. I don't care if it's a project. I don't care if it's this conversation. I don't care if it's a conversation I'm having with somebody on my podcast. If it's at the end of the day with my wife, of like end well, because too often people don't end well. They burn bridges. They cut off future opportunities. And so this idea of ending well, even though it was a big screw up, I mean, just financially, I had to pay for an extra year of college, and I missed out. Actually, our coach at the time, his name was Tom Izzo, which to most people outside the States isn't going to mean anything, but Tom is now as like truly Hall of Fame coach that I could have probably had an ongoing relationship with Tom if I would have ended well. So I missed out on a lot because of that, but I gained so much from it because of the screw up.
Well, I think all of us in our screw ups, if you are a person who's open to learning, like I say, I think about things before I go and start shouting my mouth off in a situation. I've learned that a lot of times, but and again, like you're saying there, you've just changed it. So it's actually being open to learn. I think I've got to fail fast and learn quick, and that's the important thing. Learn quick is the important thing, isn't it?
Yeah,
that's brilliant. That's fantastic advice. That end well. I think that's figure it out and end well. They're two little bites from this show at the minute that I'm hearing.
Thank you.
So we mentioned it at the beginning. And we really talked about it. You started People and Projects podcast. Why on earth did you decide to do that? What drove you to do that? And why did you carry on?
Well, it's so funny you asked that, because we've been going since 2009, which at that time, there weren't that many podcasts out there, but I was interviewed by one. So it was like I was having a conversation like this right here. And after we stopped recording, I was just asking the guy, like, so tell me about this. Like, what the, yeah. you know, I think at the time, Cornelius Fichtner had his already started. Yeah. And I had had a relationship with Cornelius, so we knew each other reasonably well. But this guy in particular, I'm like, how do you do it? And I realized after a conversation of like, the geek in me would love to do this. So I just thought, I'll just try it. Yeah, maybe because now you've been doing this long enough to know that the first couple episodes are not the hard part. It's keeping it going, and keeping it interesting, right? And so I'm sure it was only my parents who listened to the first one, but we're like, we just yesterday released episode 361. So we've been doing it for a while now and learning how to, you know, keep, like someone can start a blog, someone can start an internal newsletter at their company. How do you keep it going? And so I, what I didn't know at the time, Nigel, was I thought I was doing it just because I enjoyed the geek side of it. I didn't realize what a learning opportunity it was. Yeah. Because I spend time with you now and we learn together. Right. And so I had no vision at the time for how much it would impact me, you know, as a learner, not just hopefully listeners. Right. But it was, I'm just going to grow. So very thankful for that.
Yeah. It's a great point. It's something that I've mentioned it recently was last year I had some mental health problems. And during the summer, I took a break from the show and I was considering stopping the show. Mm-hmm. And then I, for whatever reason, I said, no, I will carry on for a bit. I'll run it to the end of the year, see how it goes. And then in the months leading up to that, I started to get some momentum on guests because it started, you know, you get the ebb and flow of guests. And sometimes you're there going, right, I've got these guests on and 15 of them, not 15, but you know what I mean? All the ones you've got scheduled for next show that you've due to put out because you want to keep it regular, suddenly they're not there. And then you're scrabbling around trying to get some of the other ones who were kind of maybes. And it started to get quite intense. And then, so that was one of the reasons I was thinking of not. And then suddenly it started momentum, getting people on the shows become easier, a lot more people on it. And probably a month ago, and I've been doing this now since 2019. And originally I was shouting into the internet on my podcast to get people to buy one of my silly books that I'd written. If anyone's on the video, it's these ones here. And it was just shouting into the internet, hoping someone would listen. And then I thought, well, let's add some value. So I interview people. And what you said there is, I'm looking back now, I've been pulling together a little video of all the people who've been on the show so far. And there's over 45 people, nearly 50 people that I've interviewed so far. That's nearly 40, 50 hours worth of content. That's me having a masterclass from 50 people for an hour. Over the past 3 years. And that's way more training.
We're learning. Exactly. If we're learning, other people are too. So like you said, we're getting trained while other people are as well.
And I'm just thinking, if I was paying for an hour of each of these guys training, it would cost me a fortune. So I think it's a fantastic way of getting that. Now I'm noticing we're just coming up on time now. And there's a couple of last few questions that I ask the show. Yeah, we're coming up to
that's gone fast
on the hour. It usually does. It's funny, I always find that people don't realize, but they do like talking about themselves. It's quite fun. So these interviews, I do like these because people can spend a lot longer talking than they realize they can about themselves. So what was the last project pod type podcast that you listened to, not including yours and not including mine?
Yeah, you know, probably Stuart Taylor's, because he Stuart. I think you are a clear voice. I think Stuart is trying to do, you know, build up a YouTube presence, and so I think probably the truth is I don't listen to a lot of project podcasts. Yeah. I like to listen to a lot of stuff that's almost seemingly unrelated to what we do, and then what you end up finding is it's related to what we do.
Cool, got that. So, what's the last project blog that you would have read?
You know, I don't really go to blogs. You know what I do is I go to LinkedIn. I use LinkedIn.
I do as well.
Far, far more than I ever would have thought. And I'd recommend that other people follow your lead in that of just because then other people's blogs are there. And then if it looks interesting, you can go. But, you know, I find that it just, there's a lot of diversity there.
Cool. I agree. I think it's, there's a place you can find in there. And I think from the project management community, there's a lot of really, really good opportunities to get insight on a regular basis just from following the right people. So the other one, the other last two questions now. If you had a top tip for a seasoned PM, someone who's been out there, they've been in the trenches. I know from your podcast, you have things like that, a PM who's been there, done that, qualified, certified, deliver several projects. What was the top tip that you would give them this minute to say, right, do this now?
Yeah, it's a great question because there's all kinds of technical PM stuff, but they probably already know that. But this is a while back, I interviewed Whitney Johnson. She's typically in the top 10 or 15 of the Thinkers 50. So she's a clear voice on management leadership, but her book is called Build an A-Team. And her entire book could be summarized by an S-curve. And so the idea of the S-curve is when someone starts relatively new in a role, they're at the bottom of the S-curve. And then as they learn more, eventually they get to the top of the S-curve. And so one of the messages of her book that I think is relevant to seasoned PMs is she says, be careful about spending too much time at the top of the S-curve. The idea is sometimes seasoned PMs can start to get complacent and they can start to maybe atrophy. Yeah. And it's like that person that says, yeah, I have 20 years of experience, but it's really 1 year repeated 20 times, right? They're not really stretching. And so there's something about, the way she says in her book is jump to another S curve, which doesn't necessarily mean leave the company. It just taking on, become more of a program manager, you know, take on different sorts of projects.
Yeah.
Don't get too comfortable, because if you get too comfortable as a seasoned PM, you might get just knocked off the top of the S curve by someone who's younger and gets paid less, or get automated out of a job because you know they're not trying to grow. Now, since they're listening to your podcast, they're probably not at risk at that because they are somebody who wants to continue to grow. But this idea of not getting complacent, as well as think of your role as a developer of people, not just a leader of projects.
Yeah,
just because when I think back to my perhaps proudest moments beyond projects, I think of people who had the opportunity to lead when I was the conductor, so to speak.
Yeah.
And now they're the conductor themselves, right? Yeah. At their companies. And I think one mark of a leader for all of us is, did we develop other leaders? You know? And so if they can think of themselves as, yes, you're a seasoned PM, but also you're a developer of people. And that's a true joy.
Yeah, it is. And I've seen people surpass my achievements and gone zooming up, and that is, and it's really lovely to see. The final question, we're going back to when you're at school talking to you, when you're doing that first project on the pigeon stuff. What's project management advice? What would you have given yourself at that point?
Yeah, that's really interesting. I think I'd probably want to tell myself, like, you have no idea how hard this is going to be and how rewarding it's going to be. Like keep going down this path. And so thankfully I did, but I think sometimes people, you know, they go, I don't want to manage people, or I don't, and you could be a project manager without managing people. But I think I would say, you are going to love this. Keep going, you know? And I think if I would have the opportunity to tell myself, just break things down into smaller bits and get them done incrementally. Like, we wouldn't have used the term agile back then,
but
good project management's always been agile, you know?
Like
management has always tried to break things down and to do it incrementally. And so I think I would have, you know, tried to formalize that maybe a little bit. And probably the other thing I would say, Nigel, is, hey, Andy, you know that project problem that you're losing sleep over? You'll barely remember it a year from now.
Yeah.
So just, you know, get some sleep. This is not the end of the world. I mean, I think of the presentations I have to give early on. I'm like, oh, they're the sponsor. Like, oh, I can't sleep. And all that stuff was not worthy of losing sleep over, you know, but we don't realize it in the moment. So it's the, hey, you know what? Enjoy the ride. You'll barely remember the downsides. And there's so many joys to come from delivering that it's enjoy the ride.
Brilliant. So, Andy, thank you very much for that. If people want to carry on the conversation, get in touch with you, find out more, what's the best way for them to get hold of you?
Yeah, you know, going to the People and Projects podcast would be a great way. It's peopleandprojectspodcast.com. There's a way to contact me there. But that's probably the easiest way to just get a taste of this. So listen to Nigel's first, and then after you listen to Nigel's podcast, then cue me up. So
thank you for that. Thank you for the plug and the support, my friend. Thank you. It's been a fascinating conversation and really, really, really entertaining and informative, which is what these things need to be. Again, have a fantastic rest of your day. And thank you very much for coming on the show.
Totally loved it. We're going to get you on mine too. So I look forward to that.
Brilliant. Looking forward to that as well. Thanks, mate. Cheers, mate. Wow, you made it this far. I'm guessing that you enjoyed the show if you have. Or maybe you've just left it playing in the background and forgot it was on. But if you did enjoy it and you're inclined to, I'd be delighted if you could share the show with your colleagues. It's discoverability with podcasts is quite difficult, especially with a niche one like this. But sharing with your colleagues and letting them have a chance to listen to these fantastic guests would be brilliant. If you've got time, a review on whatever platform you listen to it on would be great too, especially if it's a 5-star one. Again, that makes it easier for people to discover the show when they're searching on there, because comments raise it up the old search engine ops and optimization on all the different tools. If you are feeling flush, I have a couple of ways you could contribute. One is Patreon, patreon.com/SundayLunchPM, and you could donate some money to the podcast that way, or you can jump along to my website, nigelcreaser.com, www.nigelcreaser.com, and click on the link to the shop, and in there you've got all my books that I've created in the varying different guises, a number of different ways you can grab a copy of those. And down the bottom I've got the my guests' books, so everyone who's been on here, if they've had a book, I've got a link to their book in there, and Amazon give me a little bit back for when someone buys from them. But more importantly, if you come back next time and listen, I'll be delighted. So I'll leave you alone and let you get on with your day now. Thank you. Bye. Well, I hope you enjoyed the interview with Andy. I do urge you to pop along to his podcast. He has some fantastic guests on there, and he, as you can heard from Andy there, he's like a whirlwind of energy. People and Projects podcast is the name of his podcast, so jump along to there. All I have to say is thank you very much for listening to the show, and talk to you again next week. Well, it's goodbye from me, Nigel Creaser. And it's goodbye from him, the Sunday Lunch PM. Goodbye.